Burgers next. Support for WGTD comes from Jack and Drea, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, newly reimagined for 2019. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. More information at jackanddrea.com. Jack and Drea, a proud supporter of WGTD's morning show. And we welcome you to the Friday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I am very, very happy to be able to spend the next few minutes of WGTD's morning show. First of all, with a good friend to the morning show, Nancy Matthews. I almost said old friend.
Thank you.
we're all getting up there, but what I really mean to say is a long time and good friend to the museum. Nancy Matthews recently retired from the Kenosha Public Museum, but not feeling very retired at the moment because a week from today, or a week and a day from today, will be the opening of the 22nd Pike River Rendezvous. And Nancy Matthews, who has long had a major hand in the shaping and coordinating of that event, is still in the saddle for the Pike River Rendezvous. So she's here to talk about that. Again, that is the first weekend in August. And also with us today is Chris Coachman, who is the community relations liaison for the city of Kenosha. And that means, among other things, that she is kind of the central coordinator of major events for the city of Kenosha, including the Tall Ships Festival, which very nicely coincides with the Pike River Rendezvous this year. Actually, kind of a longer weekend. Pike River is Saturday, Sunday, and I believe Tall Ships begins on Thursday.
They come in. The ships come in on a parade of sail Thursday afternoon. The festival opens Friday morning and continues through Sunday.
Fantastic. So we have a lot to talk about. So Nancy Matthews, Chris Coachman, we welcome both of you to the morning show.
Thanks, Greg.
Thank you.
Nancy, maybe you can just say a word about kind of the connection between these two events before we kind of take each of them separately. But explain, first of all, kind of the historic way and also the sort of logistical way in which these two events mesh together so nicely.
Well, the Pike River Rendezvous, and as you mentioned, this is the 22nd annual, is a recreation and the celebration of the fur trading era in North America. The fur trading era began about 1650 when traders were coming into North America to trap and to trade with the American Indians that were here to obtain furs to take back to Europe to make primarily hats and other garments. Europeans had trapped beaver for gazillion years to make beaver felt hats and coats, and depleted the population of beaver in Europe. And when explorers were coming in to North America, crossing the Atlantic in the tall ships, which is the connection, they discovered that there were abundant beaver in North America, and hence the fur trade began. So the tall ships are really a central story to the fur trading era as well. And the Pike River Rendezvous has always been the first weekend in August, so it just worked out really nicely to schedule the Tall Ships Festival that same weekend.
I know it's happened before that these two events have coincided. Any idea how many times over the years they've been?
I think three times we've had the Tall Ships in recent years, dating back to 2003.
And actually, I think the first year they came was the reason for moving the rendezvous out of Porio Park on the north side of Kenosha to Simmons Island, because it worked so much better to have the fur trading reenactment with the Tall Ships Festival.
That's right. That's a nice reminder of how Pike River Rendezvous actually started as a somewhat modest-sized event, and it was really designed more than anything to be a showcase for that lovely park on the north side of Kenosha that's kind of tucked out of the way and very easy to miss.
Yeah, it is. And it didn't take long for the rendezvous to really outgrow Porio Park. The space there for all of the reenactors that wanted to participate quickly got swallowed up. So the opportunity to move to the island, and it's really a much more fitting environment. You aren't surrounded by all of the neighborhood houses, and plus you get the lovely breeze off the lake, which makes it many, many years much more enjoyable.
Absolutely. And of course, we're talking about more than 300 participants, most of them reenactors, and they take up a lot of room.
And they take up a lot of room. And we have this year, I think, between 400 and 500 reenactors that will be participating. Wow. With probably more than 150 camps.
Oh, terrific. We'll talk about a few more of those specifics in just a moment. Chris Coachman, I'm really interested to hear a little more about the work that you do for the city of Kenosha in terms of coordinating major events. First of all, what kind of major events are we talking about that typically fall under your purview?
Well, the big one everyone's probably familiar with is the 4th of July and the parade. So I am the organizer for the Kenosha Civic Veterans Parade. Sponsored by Snap-on, which takes place on the Sunday prior to the 4th of July. And coincidentally, Nancy is a longtime parade volunteer as well. She's been with the parade longer than I have, actually. I've produced, I believe, 8 of the parades now for the city of Kenosha.
It was a lively 4th of July parade this year, wasn't it, thanks to Mother Nature?
Yes, we weren't too happy about that. But hopefully that's enough rain on our parade now for years to come. So that's probably the biggest one people are familiar with. But the city also partners with Happenings Magazine to produce the Peanut Butter and Jam Concert Series, which is a very popular free concert Thursdays in July and August outside City Hall. We partner with a lot of others in the community to present their events as well, everything from Tuesdays at the Shell to the Lincoln Park Live music series. So those are some of our summer events. In the fall, we have something called Fall Festival, which features giant pumpkins in a contest. And that's been really growing and growing in popularity. Avoid the pun, please. But and that is on coming up on September 14th this year. And even in the wintertime, we have an ice rink outside of City Hall, and we have a Snow Days Festival in February with ice sculptures, kids' activities. Usually by mid-February, everyone's had cabin fever, so they're ready to get out and play in the snow and enjoy the winter fun. So lots of good things going on, but summer's our busy time.
Right. So the word coordinator or coordinating is one of those kind of scary open-ended terms that can mean a whole lot of different things and can probably swallow up you and your whole life pretty easily. More specifically or officially, what kind of coordinating are you typically doing with some of these really big events?
It really kind of varies. We're very fortunate that we have a lot of good partners for the events. So for the parade, I am the lead producer of the parade, but together with probably 35 volunteers that serve as the parade marshals that take direction from me to organize the parade. And city staff is such a big help of it, too. They're the unsung heroes that don't always get their names in the newspaper or on the radio. But our parks department is fantastic. Our engineering, our GIS, which makes the important maps, so we all know where we're going and what we're supposed to be doing. So it really takes a lot of teamwork. And then, of course, our community sponsors. A lot of these things wouldn't happen without the support. I mentioned Snap-on was the presenting sponsor for the parade. Festival Foods is presents our fireworks. I mean, there's so many things we're able to do because of our sponsors. So we appreciate all that, too.
It's also probably important for us to clarify, Nancy, why don't you say this, because you have were and in a sense still are a part of the Kenosha Public Museum for such a long time, that when we're talking about something like the Pike River Rendezvous, we're actually talking about a City of Kenosha event in a sense, because of the very nature of what the museum is.
Right. The Pike River Rendezvous is an event that involves many city departments. Special events with Chris and Parks Department is a huge part of the planning committee. They provide, you know, picnic tables and fencing and all garbage collecting during the event, all kinds of other logistics that the event couldn't happen without them. And then the museum has been a part of it for really the 22 years it's been in existence. At different levels over time, it's kind of grown and waned over time. But providing hands-on activities in some of the coordination. Rachel Cleese Anderson, who's the curator of exhibits at the Kenosha Public Museums, has been instrumental in developing the posters, a souvenir pewter medallion that is available for sale at the rendezvous as well. And this year's medallion is just absolutely gorgeous. She did a fabulous job. One side is a tribute to the Tall Ships Festival with the tall ship, and the other side is with a ship's captain. So those will be available for sale at the rendezvous. And so it takes all of these departments working together to bring about this event.
For those of you just joining us on today's morning show, we're actually talking about two really special events that are going to be occurring next weekend. That is the first weekend in August, the 22nd Pike River Rendezvous, and Nancy Matthews, recently retired from the Kenosha Public Museum, retired, ha ha ha, is once again taking a major role in the coordination and execution of the Pike River Rendezvous on Simmons Island. And with us also is Chris Coachman, who is Community Relations Liaison for the City of Kenosha. And as Nancy was just explaining, the Kenosha Public Museum is a department of the City of Kenosha, and so when the museum mounts a huge event like this, it is by its very nature an event for the City of Kenosha. And that same weekend is another really major event, the Festival of Tall Ships. Chris, let's talk about that event for a little bit. First of all, how does something like that happen? I don't mean, you know, community partners and the people who pay for it and all of that. I mean, like, where do these ships come from? how does this event even theoretically exist in the first place? And then what makes it possible from time to time for this event to come to here, to Kenosha?
Great. I'm happy to provide a little context for that, Greg. So the Tall Ships Festival in Kenosha is part of a greater endeavor called the Tall Ships Challenge, put on by Tall Ships America, which is a little nonprofit located out in Rhode Island. And the Tall Ship Festivals come through the Great Lakes only once every 3 years. So it's our turn in the rotation. And Kenosha is one of only 11 ports on all of the Great Lakes that are hosting the Tall Ships this year. And only one of two on Lake Michigan, the other being Green Bay, which is going on this weekend. So we had the opportunity, it came up a couple of years ago, to host and to be one of the host ports for the Tall Ships because the City of Chicago opted out. They have had Tall Ships in recent years, and just for the record, there is no Tall Ships Festival in Chicago this year. So come to Kenosha, everyone.
Come to Kenosha.
So Tall Ships America provides sail training, and then there's also some competitive races between the ports. But at each of the ports, there's an opportunity for a festival, and each one is unique. But here in our Kenosha Festival, we will have an art fair. We'll have live music. We will have the Pepsi Kid Zone, where we'll have a lot of fun activities, including provided free activities by our friends at the Kenosha Public Museum. So there will be a lot to do, but the main attraction is boarding and touring five of the seven ships, which will be docked along our South Harbor, and the other two will be on the North Harbor Wall for sailaways.
For sailaways?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, you want to get your tickets now because we expect a lot of them will sell out. Some of our Twilight sales are already sold out. Tickets are $55 for day sales and $75 for Twilight sales. You can buy them at the festival if there are any left, but I'd really recommend going on our KenoshaTallships.com website and look for the ticket link to get those tickets in advance.
Right. Tell us more about these ships. Where they come from, I assume they are reconstructions or,
I mean,
very carefully wrought imitations of the real thing. But what era are we talking about? What kind of ships are we talking about?
They're all very unique, and we're very excited about this fleet. It's actually an international fleet. We have the Picton Castle, which is flagged out of the Cook Islands, which just finished its seventh time circumnavigating the globe.
Wow.
And the Picton has a very unique mission in that it collects school supplies for kids in third world countries, and the crew actually goes out and teaches at some of their stops along the way.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And so reflective of that, we're working with our Kenosha Public Library and Kenosha Literacy Council with some programming for our festival and also collecting gently used children's books that will be locally distributed, but it's kind of echoing the Picton Castle's mission.
Yeah, wonderful.
And our other international ship is called the Blue Nose 2 out of Nova Scotia. And that ship is really the pride of Nova Scotia. It's a replica of a fishing schooner from, I believe, the mid-1800s. And that is meant to promote tourism in Nova Scotia. And it doesn't often come that far from home. So we're really pleasantly pleased to have her come all the way down to Lake Michigan in our port.
Very good.
Yes.
By the way, I just have to add, you're not even glancing at your notes as you're rattling off all this information about the tall ships. I'm very impressed.
Thank you. I'm dreaming tall ships these days. So,
morning, noon, and night. Huh?
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. Brig Niagara is out of Erie, Pennsylvania, and that is a War of 1812 replica vessel.
Wow.
The Niagara gets credit for helping win the War of 1812 with a key battle, so that's pretty cool to have her. Dennis Sullivan, people may recognize that name right out of Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
Dennis Sullivan very much has an educational and environmental mission. Kids are on board all the time with Dennis Sullivan, learning about our Great Lakes and our ecology and so forth, so really glad to have her. And then Pride of Baltimore 2 is the fifth one on the dock side where people will board and tour. And that is an initiative of tourism for Baltimore. So we're glad that mm-hmm. ship has traveled all this way. Our two sailaway vessels are our own Redwich, which has made Kenosha her home port for the last, I believe this is the third year, mm-hmm. And also Appledore 4 out of Bay City, Michigan, which that is a venue that also hosted the tall ships last weekend. So. Mm. In Bay City, Michigan. 48 seats are available on board those two sailaways.
On each of those two.
Okay. So we would love to see people take advantage to come out and see the tall ships. It's a really unique and lovely way to enjoy the festival, to go out on the lake and see the ships from that angle coming back in.
I should think. Wow.
Yes.
Do you know who actually owns these vessels?
It's all different. So there's a Lunenburg Maritime Museum that owns the Blue Nose 2. Some of them are owned by their municipalities.
Right.
So it's all a little bit different. Some of them, like Dennis Sullivan, is owned by Discovery World, which is a museum along Lake Michigan and Milwaukee, for those who don't know, which teaches a lot about the Great Lakes and all the assets we have there. So they're all a little bit different. And then Redwich is privately owned. So our local captain, Andrew Sadock, runs it as his business to take people out on excursions, corporate as well as private.
Wow. Yeah. So what is the role exactly then of the company out in Rhode Island that you mentioned right off the bat?
So Tall Ships America coordinates this tall ship series and organizes the opportunity for the ships to have these races and sail training in the different venues. So next year it will be East Coast, and then they work with the different host cities, port cities, if you'll have them, to see who would like to host the ships. And that's what helps pay for the ships. So the ships didn't come to Kenosha for free. That's where the corporate sponsors come in,
right?
As well as the city of Kenosha to pay for the ships to come in. And then that's why it is a ticketed festival where people need to pay to come in and tour and board the ships.
Right. So one can admire them from afar if you like, of course, yes, perfectly for free. But otherwise, to actually climb aboard five of these ships, well, actually all seven of the ships, but the other two are designed.
Sailaways. But you could. You could book a sailaway on the two sailaways, and then you could go to the festival and board and tour the other ships. A question we've been getting a lot is people want to know, if I buy a sailaway ticket, does that include admission into the festival? And it does not. Partly for the reason that the two sailaway vessels are not moored along the festival footprint. They're across the harbor, nearer to where the Pike Right River Rendezvous is taking place. So to just kind of draw the picture a little bit of what's happening where, we talked a bit about Pike River Rendezvous taking place on Simmons Island, which people may know is on near the downtown, just north of the downtown area. Just north of Simmons Island is the Kenosha Yacht Club and Sailing Center, and that's the area of the harbor where the Appledore 4 and the Red Witch will be moored, whereas the other side of the harbor, the south side of the harbor, is where the other five ships will be docked.
Right.
And the festival, with all the entertainment and the kids zone and the art fair, all that is on the festival footprint, which is a gated and ticketed entry.
Right. And so they are relatively close to each other, but they are two distinct sites.
Yes. You can see them from across the harbor.
Right.
And the question that also comes up is, well, how do I get from one to the other? You can walk. It's a good brisk 15-minute walk, but we realize not everyone wants to do so. So we're actually going to have several shuttles operating during the Tall Ships weekend, and one of the shuttles will operate from the west gates of the festival down to the Sailaway Village.
When one buys a ticket to actually board one of the tall ships, what typically is that experience like? I mean, is there a tour guide that actually talks about the ship, or are you just kind of on your own to just poke around? Or?
Sure. Well, first of all, when you buy a ticket, it admits you into the festival as a whole, and you may choose to board and tour any or all of the five ships. So people will, like you, when you go to an amusement park, wait online for your turn to board and tour the ships. And there are crew and captain around where you may ask questions, but it's not a formal tour. You know, you could ask, well, what is this used for? Or, you know, just kind of you know, ask them things about the ship, but people are touring them on their own. We expect that a lot of times people will, after they've toured a ship, need a little break. That's when they might go sit in the exploration station and hear a speaker. We have anything from children's authors to captain's chats. We have talks from the Great Lakes Fishery and our museums, a lot of good things to hear about. And then there's lots of activities for the kids that also all tie back into the ships. But it's a chance to get out of the sun a little bit and maybe do something else. And then, oh, maybe it's time to tour the next ship.
Right. And I suppose what's nice about these not being formal guided tours is it's a perpetual open door, in a sense. You don't have to wait for 2:15 or 2:30 or
right.
But the next tour. I mean, whenever it's sort of suits your fancy, it's on to the next ship. And
exactly. We do have a fast pass option for the people that have a very burning desire to tour all five ships within a limited amount of time. So that is an option that might be of interest. Tickets are available in advance, and we do have a limited number of them, so they could sell out.
Right. Nancy Matthews, can you say a word about what the museum's presence is at the Tall Ships Festival specifically? I understand that there is something that you are providing.
Well, I'm not with museums anymore,
right.
I can't really speak to exactly what's going on. But
in general.
As Chris mentioned, there will be hands-on activities that the museum will be providing. And I believe isn't it going to be closer to the Civil War Museum? Or it's actually going to be within the festival.
It's going to be within the festival. So we're excited to see what they're going to actually present. But I'm told that there are three different stations that kids can visit and experience. And it's tied into a nautical theme. Mm-hmm. So we'll have to stay tuned on that.
Right.
Well, and of course, with the Civil War Museum, it plays in very well with the history of the Civil War and ships and submarines, the development of submarines. So that whole marine aspect and using the steamboats on the Mississippi. So boats in general were a very important part of the Civil War. Right. So it's a nice connection with the tall ships.
Absolutely. So that is, of course, really, really exciting. So what is the admission cost to be admitted to the Tall Ships Festival?
The cost is $18 for adults and $9 for children 17 and younger. But we also have a family pass for $45, which admits two adults and any kids with them. But better still, if you're a Kenosha resident and can show ID proving that, you can get in for only $33, which is a steal to be able to bring in two adults and any children with them.
Wow. So that family pass you were just talking about, if you, and that again is for who?
The family pass is for anyone, but we have a special Kenosha rate.
For the city of Kenosha?
For city of Kenosha residents that have an ID.
All right. So present your ID and then you get in for a steal and for a very, very exciting experience.
Yes.
Terrific. For those of you just joining us, we're speaking today on the morning show with Chris Coachman, who is with the city of Kenosha. She coordinates major events like the Tall Ships Festival. And it occurs to me, before we turn to the Pike River Rendezvous, you should spell out the schedule of what's going on with the Tall Ships Festival.
Yes, people won't want to miss the ship's arrival in the Parade of Sail next Thursday, August 1st, beginning at 3:45 p.m. This is the chance to see the ships under sail as they arrive in the Kenosha Harbor and dock one by one. The Parade of Sail will go from Pennoyer Park Bandshell down to Kemper Center before turning and arriving in the harbor. Our Peanut Butter and Jams concert will be kicking off at 6 o'clock. Just as the final ship is expected to dock, so don't miss that. But the festival opens for the public on Friday morning. The general opening time is 10 a.m., although we do have an early admission option for 9 a.m. for those who wish to perhaps photograph the ships before all the crowds arrive, and that's a $50 ticket to enter at 9 a.m., and they may stay then for the festival. So festival regular hours are 10 a.m. until 6 p.m., Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, with all the things we've just talked about, the boarding and touring, the entertainment, and so forth. But we also have Kenosha Rocks the Dock Friday night from 7 till 9 p.m. with the band American English. And then three of the ships will be open for boarding and touring, and there'll be a lot of other fun activities tied in for that on Friday night.
Fantastic. So again, that is the Tall Ships Festival, which will be the first weekend in August. And at least Thursday in our extended forecast is sunny, pleasant, and 78. So, and fingers and fingers crossed that Mother Nature will continue on that same track through the rest of that weekend. And it is, of course, also the 22nd Pike River Rendezvous on Simmons Island. And one of the things we should say is that from the very start, this has been and continues to be a free event.
Correct. It is free and open to the public. All of the entertainment is free. But if you would like to buy period-esque food and souvenirs, you know, please bring some money along.
Absolutely.
Some of our reenactors will be on the island on Thursday, and they will be shooting off a cannon in Welcome to the Tall Ships.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, so wow. So we're excited about that. And with the Tall Ships Festival going on Friday, the Pike River Rendezvous Camp will be open to the public. There won't be any scheduled entertainment, and the horse and wagon shuttle will not be running, but it will be open and free to the public on Friday.
So people could still kind of walk through.
Wander through.
Right.
Exactly.
So for the sake of someone who has never had the pleasure of visiting the Pike River Rendezvous, explain what the experience is. I mean, as you walk through, what are the kind of things and who are the sorts of people that you see as you walk through the Pike River Rendezvous?
The fur trade era in at least in this part of North America, took place from about 1650 to 1850. So it was about a 200-year period. And the Pike River Rendezvous really highlights all 200 years from the early colonists and explorers, the voyagers who were coming into this area to trade furs. And we also have a presence of the mountain men from the Rocky Mountains who were trapping and trading as well. And so it's kind of everything in between. A wide variety of camps. We have the voyagers and the river pirates that are down near the beach. Just to let people know, there's been a lot of construction on the island this summer, and there's a new roadway, new parking lot, and I do believe the Simmons Island bathhouse will be closed, so please keep that in mind. The reenactors are volunteers who do this for fun. There are some reenactors, such as the traders who sell souvenir goods and replica items to the reenactors and other people who are interested, and the food vendors who do this more for a living as opposed to just strictly volunteer. But You can go up to each camp. This is a reenactment by invitation only, so each of the reenactors' camps have to be reviewed by the reenactor committee, and they are chosen for their authenticity to the time period and their ability to communicate to the public. So feel free to walk up to them and ask them questions. And if anyone is interested in becoming a reenactor, this is a good way to kind of scope things out. We have entertainment throughout the weekend on Saturday and Sunday. There are musical performances, pirate battles. We have a horsewoman from Illinois who is going to be demonstrating dressage, horse movements, and there are games and kids activities. And again, it's all free. Thanks to the city of Kenosha.
Explain why it's called the Pike River Rendezvous.
Well, it's because the Pike River runs through Kenosha. So, and pike were an important fish for the Potawatomi work here, and actually the name Kenosha comes from a Potawatomi word that means place of the pike. Uh-huh. So, and the Potawatomi did have a presence on Simmons Island. There was an encampment there. I can't remember the exact dates, but I believe it was in the early 1800s, before Kenosha actually became a town or village. And so it just seemed like a natural fit to call it Pike River.
Right. And then what about that word rendezvous?
Rendezvous were events that took place between the trappers and the traders to exchange goods and services. The largest rendezvous that took place was at Grand Portage in Minnesota. So the mountain men were coming from the west, and voyageurs and trappers and traders from all over the Great Lakes region convened in that area for I don't remember how long it was, but an extended period of time to trade goods and services and just generally have a good time.
It's just amazing to think about how they would even know that the next Grand Portage rendezvous is going to be on such and such a day or the week of September in such and such a year, that somehow word would travel.
Yeah, and I'm not sure exactly how all of that planning took place, but a lot of it was seasonal and weather dependent, because it took so long to get from particularly Montreal, where the goods were leaving, to get to Grand Portage. So I think that was kind of the determining factor, was that length of travel time.
Right. So one of the things that the last time I visited Pike River, which I guess was last year, actually, one of the things I was just struck by was the level of detail that one can see in each of these, in each of these camps. I mean, down to like the smallest details of how one would live and what one would have, but also that each of them is a little bit different. It's not like you're seeing the same thing times 40, but each one, in a sense, will have its own personality.
Exactly. And there are some reenactors that do take on a person or personality to be authentic for the time period. And there are others that are just, you know, kind of living it in kind of a third person manner. And, you know, the front of the house, we try and keep very authentic. You get behind the house, and there are a few modern conveniences.
A lawn chair, whatever.
Air mattresses.
Air mattresses, and, coolers. Ice. And, yeah, ice is a big part of the weekend to keep all the food cold. But, yes, we try and keep the front of the house as authentic as possible. And there are many people that their dress is extremely authentic, down to what's underneath the outer garments. So.
A real pleasant surprise for me last year when I visited was all of the artists that were there. Creating things, beautiful things that you could purchase. Give our listeners some sense of what I'm talking about.
We have a wide variety of people that are portraying, different kinds of artisans. We had a blacksmith last year, people who are doing weavings. Whether it's on a small loom or just finger weaving, wood carvers, candle makers. There are just a lot of soap makers, candy makers, all kinds of people that are portraying different kinds of skills and trades and crafts from that 200-year time period.
Right. And it is just so fun in many cases to watch them in action as
they are
right in the midst of creating yet another creation.
Right.
So it's really lovely. And then, of course, lots of different entertaining, including music and dancing and horseplay, so to speak, that is really, really fun.
Yeah. And one of the highlights of the rendezvous, both on Saturday and Sunday, is, of course, the Pirates Battle that takes place at 11 o'clock each of those days. So the River Pirates actually go out on the lake, and then they kind of storm the shore. And the colonists are there to kind of keep them at bay. So it's an exciting and very noisy time at the reenactment. We always encourage people to try and get there at least for that event. New this year, this is one thing that I've been coordinating, is a welcome tent, which will be right at the west entrance of the reenactment, where the horse and wagon shuttle that runs from Kennedy Park to the reenactment will be dropping people off. So I will be there with several community volunteers, and we will be welcoming people, handing out the schedules, reviewing where everything is, answering questions, and selling the medallions, the souvenir medallions this year. And that will be, as I mentioned, right at the west entrance. And near that west entrance as well is the all-important food tents and many of the large souvenir traders.
Fantastic. You know, I really like that, not that I wrote it, but I watched it, the horse and wagon shuttle. It's just really interesting. You could just sort of tell, even without writing it, just watching it, that it's kind of this intriguing way of helping you step back in time, in a sense.
Right, exactly. And again, that is a free service that we're providing from Kennedy Park to the reenactment. Because of the tall ships this year, 50th Street will be closed, so there will be no access to the island or the reenactment from 50th Street across the bridge.
At least not by vehicle. You can walk over.
Right. You can walk over, but you can't drive over. Because I know a lot of people would drive over and then just park there and enter the reenactment from 50th Street. So we encourage people to park on side streets. On the north side, and if you're going to park in Kennedy Park, access that on 45th Street.
Yes, there is a limited amount of parking down at the north end of Kennedy Park where the horse and wagon shuttle takes off from, and people should probably plan to park on the side streets. The other option people can have is if they're wanting to visit the Pike River Rendezvous and or tall ships, that we have a free shuttle running from the Dream Playground area at Petsky Park on the north side. It's actually a parking lot owned by Carthage College that they're allowing us to use. So people may park their cars at no charge and take a shuttle over to the 50th Street Bridge area for Pike River Rendezvous, or ride the shuttle all the way down to the Kenosha Yacht Club and Sailing Center for the tall ships. And those shuttles begin running at 9:30 a.m. daily, and they run until 9 at night Friday and Saturday, Sunday, I believe, a little bit earlier.
Wonderful. That's a great idea, actually. Can you be a little more specific about exactly where a Dream Playground is on that parking lot that's right across the way from it?
Sure. It's at 28th Street and 14th Avenue. And if anyone looks up Dream Playground, they'll be able to find it. But again, our KenoshaTallShips.com website is a great resource for people to find out about that shuttle and the other free shuttle we're running from Indian Trail High School into the festival site. People may say, why are you all the way out at Indian Trail? Well, because Unified was nice enough to allow us to use their parking lot. And we do expect to have a lot of visitors coming from the interstate, whether it's from Milwaukee, Madison, Chicago, Lake Geneva. They're being directed to exit Highway 158, which turns into 52nd Street in the city. And so it should be very easy for those visitors from out of town to find Indian Trail High School. And we'll have directional signs too.
Right.
But that's another option to get to the tall ships or to the Pike River Rendezvous.
Great idea. By the way, Chris Coachman, in terms of people who would end up boarding the tall ships, actually visiting them, we kind of talked about the fact that it's they're not guided tours in the most formal sense of the word, but there's somebody there to answer questions. Help our listeners understand kind of where they get to go and what kind of things they get to see when they board those tall ships.
Sure. Well, I think people will be very interested to just see how tall the ships are. First of all, they're going to be looking up, up, up. And if you can imagine these masts, some of them are as tall as 13 stories. I don't know if we even have a building that's 13 stories in downtown Kenosha. I think the downtown hospital might be 10. So they're going to be looking up and being pretty amazed by that.
They are tall ships.
They are tall ships.
Hence the name Tall Ships.
Yes.
Exactly. And so there will be opportunities to walk around the upper deck, but also to take a peek below deck too and kind of see how did people live. And the Niagara is one that is very authentic to its era. Again, that's from our War of 1812 era, and the staff, or the crew rather, has their mess hall, so to speak, with, I believe they still use a wood-burning stove to cook their meals.
Wow.
I believe they sleep on hammocks below deck, and it's pretty cozy down there to see how the sailors lived back in the War of 1812 era, and the crew still does that today.
Wow.
So they get a little sense of how people live on board. And, of course, you know, the captain's wheel. Everybody probably wants a picture in front of the captain's wheel.
Very good. So remind our listeners once again about the basic outlines of the Tall Ships Festival, which actually begins on Thursday. Not officially. The festival begins on Friday.
On Friday. So you don't want to miss them arriving in the Parade of Sail on Thursday afternoon, starting at 3:45 out on the lakefront and docking between 5 and 6 p.m. But the festival opens to the public, by and large, at 10 a.m. on Friday. You can go on board and visit the ships. You can take a break for food or drink, visit the art fair, have some activities with the kiddos, or listen to a speaker in our exploration station. So lots to do for everybody. And 10 a.m. till 6 p.m. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, as well as our Kenosha Rocks the Dock on Friday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. Lots of details on KenoshaTallShips.com.
Very good. And people can buy their tickets right there at the festival. The thing that they want to think ahead about is buying a ticket, which is an additional cost to sail out into Lake Michigan on the two special tall ships, and that you encourage people to do sooner rather than later.
It will save people waiting in line if they buy their admission tickets in advance, so that is a bonus for that. We do have festival tickets also available, just the adult or child tickets available at Festival Foods locally in Kenosha, Summers, and Racine, and so they may buy those tickets in advance as well.
Very good. Nancy, remind our listeners about this 22nd Pike River Rendezvous, which exists in that same first weekend of August.
Exactly. The Pike River Rendezvous will be open to the public on Friday in conjunction with the festival from 9 to 5. But I want to emphasize there are no entertainment or pirates battles or anything else, no shuttle service running on Friday. It's just open to the public to walk through. And then on Saturday, because the festival is open till 6 p.m., we are extending our hours to 6 to coincide with the festival. So Saturday from 9 to 6, and then Sunday from 9 to 4.
Very good. And Nancy Matthews, was it just always a given that even though you're retired, that you would still be around for Pike River Rendezvous and helping out? Was that like stipulated in the separation agreement?
No. I knew Chris's hands were going to be very full this year with the tall ships coming in, and I said I'd be more than happy to continue to help coordinate the Pike River Rendezvous for one more year.
We'll talk later about that.
But, It the Pike River Rendezvous, I've been involved with it for 22 out of the 22 years, so it's kind of in my DNA at this point. So I expect there'll be some level of involvement that will continue in the future. But right. It's a wonderful free family event, and I hope to see many people out there next weekend.
It really is fascinating. And for anybody who loves history, and maybe even for anybody who thinks they don't love history, I mean, it's another way to experience history, not from a textbook, not from a blackboard, but from having it, in a sense, come alive all around you.
Yeah, and this year we added a tagline to Pike River Rendezvous, Living History by the Lake, to really emphasize that this is a living history event where you can come in and experience what it would be like during the fur trading era.
Very good. Nancy Matthews, still with her hand in the Pike River Rendezvous. The 22nd Pike River Rendezvous takes place this year, again at Simmons Island, the first Saturday and Sunday of August. Nancy Matthews, great to have you here again.
Thank you, Greg.
For being part of the morning show once again. And Chris Coachman, great to talk with you about all of that you do on behalf of the city of Kenosha. And we appreciate you joining us to talk about every aspect of the Festival of Tall Ships, which also occurs on the first weekend of August. Remind our listeners of the website where they can find more information about this and other city events.
KenoshaTallShips.com is the best resource for the tall ships. For our other city events, it would just be Kenosha.org.
Very good. Chris Coachman, Community Relations Liaison for the City of Kenosha, thank you also for being part of the morning show today.
Thank you, Greg.
Thanks, Greg.
So, there are morning shows available over the weekend, Saturday and Sunday, via our podcast. So, tomorrow's morning show podcast from the archives is one of my all-time favorite interviews from 2007 with best-selling author Mark Kreidler and a book called 4 Days to Glory, in which he follows the exploits of two high school seniors, both wonderful wrestlers, each of them who had won 3 individual state championship titles, and each of them going for their 4th, in other words, being successful state champions in their respective weight classes 4 years in a row, just an incredibly difficult undertaking. And he gets to know both of these young men and their families and chronicles their efforts in just breathtaking fashion. A wonderful, wonderful book. And you'll hear my interview with Mark Kreider on my podcast tomorrow. And on Sunday, to commemorate what would be the 90th birthday of Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis, I share an interview I did with best-selling biographer J. Randy Taraborelli, whose book is called Jackie Janet Lee, The Secret Lives of Janet Auchincloss and Her Daughters, Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis and Lee Roswell. It's a very, very interesting look, and it, among other things, reveals a lot about Jacqueline Kennedy that we tend not to hear about in more typical biographies, more about where she came from and from whom she came. And so that will be Sunday. On Monday's morning show broadcast, Cameron Swallow, First Lady of Carthage College, and the Wisconsin coordinator for the organization called Better Angels, which seeks in these very divided times to help people who are sharply on the left or sharply on the right to better understand one another. And there are some important events coming up in relation to Better Angels, including the screening of a really powerful documentary about Better Angels and its mission. So we'll talk about that on Monday's morning show. Tuesday, it's Kenosha's Relay for Life. Wednesday, we talk with the artistic director of the American Players Theater in Spring Green, Wisconsin, celebrating their 40th anniversary this summer. On Thursday, NPR Pops Culture correspondent Linda Holmes talking about her newly published novel, Evie Drake Starts Over. And next Friday, a conversation with Dr. Debbie Ford, the Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, and David Bruckhart, Interim Vice President of University Relations for the UW System, back recently from an exciting presentation that they made in Helsinki, Finland. The morning show is archived on our website, wgtd.org, and you can subscribe to the podcast.